Hey, sign up. We're back. That music could be only one thing. My man Jacob's in the house. That's right. The skinny on options, math. Jacob, how are you, my friend?
Good morning, Tony. Good morning. I am well on this day. How are you two?
I'm wonderful. It's very nice to see you this morning.
It's almost the time Chicago gets nice, right? It's like, I heard it was raining yesterday still, but...
It's been raining for a month, so Jacob. Close. It's almost time to be nice in Chicago.
When you get here this summer, it's going to be perfect.
That's right.
No, you invited me for the one time of the year, the two times of the year when it's nice, when people have their weddings, the end of May, beginning of
well,
June.
Well, we know... Then,
like, you're coming for geeks, aren't you?
Yeah, he's coming for geeks. And we told him that, you know, when he always said to us, I only like Chicago when the weather's nice.
So you're coming in July, right? Isn't July?
I mean, let's just be honest.
After my birthday, Jacob.
Beautiful.
If I remember correctly, you still have stuff here, don't you?
No, it's not there. It's in Michigan. Some friends took it to their garage when they moved.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Well, Michigan's just a short walk.
I do still have stuff there, but it's in Ann Arbor. So it's not even there anymore.
Oh, God. Sorry. Well, I always have room in my basement. I'm the...
And Sadno's wonderful with moving furniture. Joy to have.
I let people move stuff into my basement, and then...
and then he locks the basement, you can't get out.
And then I let people come over and go, what I call free shopping in my basement. You can just take whatever you want to get rid of it. Store it here, and then...
It is true.
And then take it at your, you know, take it for whatever it's worth.
You have done that.
My mother's very happy whenever anyone moves to Connecticut because all of a sudden they'll have a basement she can deposit things in.
That's good.
Yeah. I'm not a basement person myself, so I don't care what's. I think I go in my basement about once a year because there's monsters in there, you know, and things like that.
Ritual murder. I got you.
Yeah. It's I don't like. Tough times. You know, I don't like monsters.
It's spooky down there.
There could be somebody living in my basement. I don't think I've been there a year. So.
And they'd have so much stuff to live off of.
Oh yeah, you got bookshelves and couches and artwork. Sure, yeah, you can almost live there.
Fish chair's gone.
Yeah.
No food, hopefully.
All right, what do we got today, Jacob?
All right, so today it's a pretty like basic probability thing, but I think it's nice and it sort of highlights a couple of features of both the models that we use and the market that we live in and lets everyone sort of, and it works its way towards something which I spend a lot of time thinking about, which is how to describe the volatility surface as a whole in easier terms than here, look at a surface, which is not like a great thing to parse for people. People are much better if you can say like, here's a number. So we'll see that at the end. But for the first thing, it's looking at the probability of being in the money versus the probability of a touch for a given option. And we're going to relate this to the Markov property of Brownian motion. It is important to note that Markov was just a big deal in like the 1800s. So there's the Markov property, there's Markov chains, there's Markov processes, and there's Markov methods. And they're all related, but not exactly the same thing.
They're like cousins.
You know, there's a hockey player called Barkov.
I mean, it's a pretty common Russian name. There's also two other mathematicians named Markov, but none of the things that I'm talking about are named for either of them. They're all for Andrei Markov.
All right, let's do it.
Take your word for it.
Let's go.
We're not arguing.
We'll set it up in sort of very, very basic terms. So if we are given an out of the money option contract and we are asked about two quantities, one, the probability that the option expires in the money, and two, the probability that the strike is testable for expiration. And then we have the relatively basic question of how can we relate these two quantities? And if you're, you know, don't want to do any math yourself, you can just say, well, the platform will tell me both of these numbers if I ask it to. And so I can do that. And Tony, I don't know if you want to pull up an option sheet or everyone at home can do it, or if you've ever looked at it, making one of your columns probably in the money and percentage and one of the columns probably of a touch. And you'll see that the probability of a touch is close to double the probability in the money up and down the board everywhere they go. It's never going to be exact, and we'll get into why that's the case. But it up and down the board, it's going to be pretty close to it to double.
That's 100%.
We've always just used it as a very broad generalization. We've never tried to dig any deeper than just trust the formula.
That's right. Correct. And even
so,
works.
So today we're going to not ask how do they relate, but why do they relate like this? Because the how do they relate is pretty obvious.
And interesting enough, I a lot of times people ask, you know, the probability of touch still 2 times the delta on a shorter dated option. And it still really basically is the same formula. So yeah, it's just about 2 times, even shorter dated and longer dated. It works across the board. It's pretty cool.
That's because the problem, right? And that's because delta and probability and the money are very close to each other, right? They're off by like a small factor. Yeah.
Amongst friends, same.
Yeah. All right. So especially on shorter dated options, the longer dated you go, the more they drift apart. But let's try to look at why these two quantities relate this way, and it's sort of a very nice. The exact argument is very nice, and then there's a number of the reasons that's not quite exact add some wrinkles. But we'll start with the exact argument. We'll start by hopefully reducing some confusion. We may wind up increasing confusion, as often happens when I try to do this. Because we're thinking of one probability being double another, there's factors of two. Because the probability of a call being in the money is 1 minus the probability of a strike being in of a put being in the money. And like x goes to 1 minus x is an isometric inversion on 0, 1. If you were actually trying to compute these probabilities yourselves, you would need to keep track of like where all these minus signs and twos are running around. The twos are important. They're meaningful. But the minus ones are really like an artifact of like, are you thinking about long or short? Are you thinking about puts or calls? And so we're going to, are you thinking in the money options or out of the money options? We're going to restrict ourselves today to try to get the concepts with as little overhead as possible. So we're only doing calls, right? So that the probability of something being in the money is the same as the probability of it being the underlying being above the strike at expiration, right? For puts, all the probabilities need to go through 1 minus, so all the inequalities between probabilities need to get flipped. That is what it is, but we're gonna try to not have that be an issue today. And now we'll do the argument for the double.
Okie dokie.
Right, and so the key here is just the Brownian motion's Markov property, and the Markov property states that if you look at from any point in a Markov process, such as the Brownian motion, it's going to behave exactly like a fresh version of itself, just shifted to the new starting point. That it doesn't have any memory of how it got there, and so since a standard Brownian motion distribution at a future time is a centered normal distribution. That a normal distribution is 50% to be above zero and 50% to be below zero. Once you have reached, right, once you get to a touch, you're 50-50 to from there be in the money. Right, if it was a standard Brownian motion.
Yeah.
You'd be exactly 50-50.
I never really thought of it that way, but that's exactly how to explain it.
Right. It's that in order to be in the money or not, you at some point have to do a touch, and at the point where you hit the touch, then you're 50-50. So it's the probability of the touch times 2, right? Or probability of the touch over 2 gets the probability of the money, because you have to make a touch, and then given a touch, you're 50-50. So that's the like perfect world, and it's no different if this is underlying prices behave like Brownian motions or log prices, right? Because a touch or being in the money is the same as just being log, right? Log doesn't reorder anything. It just moves stuff. It moves the distances around, but doesn't change any ordering. So the argument goes through exactly the same. If the exponent in your geometric Brownian motion was a standard Brownian motion. However, as we'll see on the next one, that's not quite right. Even in a standard Black-Scholes model, there's drift. So let's look at that. Right, that because the efficient Markov hypothesis is sort of a thing we are slaves to if we want to do any financial mathematics. We have to continue to respect the fact that the expected value, future value of an asset should be the risk-free rate adjusted. Present value of an asset, oh, there's no need for that second E. I mean, it's the expected value of a constant, so it is the constant. So in a Black-Scholes model where underlying prices evolve as a geometric Brownian motions, this puts a drift on, like if it was just a standard Brownian motion in the exponent, that has an upward drift to it. And so in order to actually fit this, what you have to do is put a drift on the Brownian motion in the exponent of R minus sigma squared over 2, right? So that's the risk-free rate minus volatility squared over 2. This balances out, right? That E to that times T plus a Brownian motion makes you a geometric Brownian motion that has the appropriate expected value thing from the top line there. So in a pure Black-Scholes model, which side has more probability, right? So that would mean, so if that drift is positive, right? If R minus sigma squared over 2 is greater than 0, then that means that once you've hit the touch, you're now more than 50% to be above that in the future because you have a positive drift on your Brownian motion. So your calls are going to be more likely to expire in the money. So your in-the-money percentage will be bigger than half of it in the touch. Whereas if volatility was high, and that's then R minus sigma squared over 2 is negative, then you're going to be less likely to be, you're going to be less than 50% to be above. So your probability of being in the money will be less than half of the probability of a touch. But, right, so this is roughly the idea of, is risk-free rate or volatility a bigger factor? But you have to convert them to the right units because risk-free rate is measured in per times and volatility is measured in per square root time. The two is because that's really like it's like a calculus two. It's a division to go when you're integrating out to the square. It's hard to keep track of where all the twos come from, but they're for different reasons. but so the idea here is that in order, anytime you really want to compare risk-free rate and volatility, this is probably the correct thing to do is to square and divide by two the volatility, and then you get sort of them on comparable grounds. And if risk-free rate is if risk-free rate is bigger, then you expect an upward drift in a classic Brownian motion. If volatility is bigger, you expect a downward drift in classic Black-Scholes. But we also don't live in a classic Black-Scholes world, so that's why even in a classic Black-Scholes, the doubling equality wouldn't be quite exact. It would depend on whether or not R minus sigma squared over 2 is positive or negative. But in reality, that factor is small compared to volatility smile, which is my favorite part. Let's look at the next slide.
Okie dokie.
Because the market is, in reality is not a Black-Scholes. The volatility smile and surface constantly reminds us of this, right? If it were, then the implied volatility up and down the line would be identical. So instead, because we still have to balance this efficient market hypothesis requirement, if we have large moves to the downside being more likely than large moves to the upside, right, which is what we see when we see put skew, right? That's exactly what put skew is telling us when those out-of-the-money put options are much richer than the out-of-the-money call options. What that's telling us, that has to be balanced because the expected future price has to be balanced. And since there's, you know, large moves are relatively unlikely, but if the large moves to the downside are more likely than the large moves to the upside, that means that it has to be balanced out by up moves to the, by small up moves being significantly more likely than small down moves, or, you know, significantly can be a couple of percentage points because these things are relatively tight.
So this is the reality slide I'm supposed to be able to understand?
Mm-hmm. Sorry, in reality, we see the exact same difference, sort of regardless of whether volatility is high or low, because almost all underlyings are put skewed. Almost all underlyings wind up with a little bit of being more likely to be above. So on the call side, you'll find that the probability of being in the money is slightly greater than half of the probability of a touch. And on the put side, you'll find that it's slightly less. And that comes exactly from the put skew playing out in this math, right? This is why they don't quite equality match up. There would be this Black-Scholes factor, but that's actually much smaller than this sort of volatility smile factor. And so what this leads me to is that, because I often want to sort of discuss how steep is the volatility smile, but it's hard to say how steep a curve is in a single number. And it's hard to tell people about steepness in more than one number. And so one nice thing to do is you can look at how large the gap is between twice the probability of the money and the probability of a touch. And the bigger that gap, the more skewed that underlying. And so this is, maybe we'll look into this in the future, come up with something like a skew rank to try to get people some sort of thing they can get a firmer grasp on when they're trying to view, is this underlying more skewed than regular or less skewed than regular? That's really one of my long-term goals, to try to communicate skew more clearly. And I think this might be a step in that direction. All right, then we can do takeaways. You two are free. Due to the Markov property of Brownian motion, and this is the part that did resonate with you, Tom, right? In a Black-Scholes model, the probability of a touch for now the money strike is exactly double the probability of it expiring in the money, because in order to expire in the money, it has to first touch, and then it's 50-50 from there. Reality is not quite Black-Scholes, and the efficient Markov about this says that large up moves to the downside, large down moves to the downside being more likely than to the upside, which is the classic put skew, it's going to be balanced by frequency to the upside, and this would make the probability of a call being in the money slightly greater, and the probability of puts being in the money slightly less. And this list looks at the difference between the probability of a touch and twice the probability of being in the money, and infer about the strength of the skew. And it specifically, it's nice because it relates the strength of the skew not to all of the trades on the sheet, but to the one that we're looking at. Because right, the platform, when it does these computations, looks at that option price to get that option price's implied volatility, and then runs a Markov chain, which is another use of the word Markov, to runs a Markov method to compute the probabilities. So it's nice because it takes a very efficient market hypothesis, sort of, you accept the prices of the market and you see what they tell you about the probabilities and not vice versa, which is always a good idea around here.
So I don't know who this Markov guy is, but I don't like him already.
I don't like him either. It's too hard. Can any of these guys ever come up with like something really simple that I can understand?
Jacob?
All right, I'll do my best.
All right, are you ready to take a quick 90-second break? You have anything to recap? Hold on one second. Jacob.
Can you find a Batista?
Just make sure Tom was paying attention. Tom, why don't you recap it for us?
Can you find a Batista or somebody out there, you know, like that we can understand the models?
We had the one good moment, which is that, right, the reason that the probability is double is because once you hit the touch, from there, it's 50-50 to be in the money.
That part I got. I got all that. That's a good one to hold on to for today. Yeah, I'm good there.
So one breakthrough in a 20-minute segment is pretty good on a weekly basis.
That's where we dropped off. All right, my friend, thank you very much for the kind skinny on options math with Jacob. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Take a quick 90-second break and come back. We got more Tasty Live after this with, your friend and mine, Mr. Scott Sheridan, Tasty Trade World Headquarters, and that Batista you wanted. Nick Batista next with Johnny Trades.
There you go.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Live, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.